Welcome to Conversations with Anne Elizabeth, the podcast inspired by my book, I'm a Registered Dietitian, Now What?, where I have the absolute joy to sit back, relax, and have a conversation about nutrition with a variety of people who share their personal story of passion and purpose, especially registered dietitians. Today's conversation is with Talia Falador. She is a registered dietitian who has always loved everything about food, cooking it, eating it, learning about it, and talking about it. That she actually made a career of it. However, she did struggle early in her life with a disordered eating pattern. While in recovery, she discovered intuitive eating, and along with renal nutrition, she has made it her passion. Please enjoy my conversation with Talia. Well, Talia, welcome to the podcast today. Thank you for taking time to chat with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Well, I know that we met briefly on a lovely trip to, or I had a lovely trip to New York City, and we got to cross paths there, but I felt like I just wanted to know a little bit more about you, and that's why I think it's great that we have this opportunity to chat more today.
Yeah, absolutely. Same.
So I'd like to always start with my guests, kind of taking you back to when did you initially kind of get interested in dietetics or nutrition, or how did that come across your path for kind of your future?
Yeah. So I have always loved food and cooking since I was little. I've always been interested in cooking and eating.
Yes.
Yes.
The eating part's so important.
Yes. Yeah. But I went into college undecided. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I've always really liked science. So I was taking some science classes like chemistry and biology. And I was really enjoying those. And then my advisor recommended taking a nutrition class, and I really liked my nutrition class. So I decided to major in nutrition based off of that. And I didn't even really know what a dietitian was at the time. I just knew I was interested in nutrition. And then as I went along through my college career, I learned that most people in my major went on to be dietitians. So I just figured that's what I'll do too. So I just did all the steps to become a dietitian. And I've been one for almost 6 years.
Where did you go to school then?
I went to Penn State.
Okay. And I didn't know they had a dietetics program there. I guess I'd never really paid attention mm-hmm. to that. Yeah. Well, thank goodness that yeah. they did. So you didn't have to go shop anywhere else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I was lucky that they had a program.
Did you do your internship? Do they have an internship as well there?
They do have an internship. I didn't do mine through Penn State though. I did mine through UMass Amherst.
Okay. And how did you choose that internship specifically?
I was more interested in community nutrition than clinical, and the UMass Amherst internship specifically had longer rotations for food service and community, and there was still a lot of clinical, but it wasn't as clinical heavy, so I liked that aspect of it, and I went to an open house that they had, and I met the director of the program and got good vibes from her. So that was kind of how I landed on that one.
Nice. I think that's great. Like, I didn't even know open houses existed with internships. So that is such a great idea, because I feel like there is a lot when it comes to where you choose to go and if you have good vibes, because if you don't, then you're like, this isn't going to be good, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I actually decided not last minute, but the open house was in like January of my senior year of college. So I was still on like winter break. And I was thinking about going, and my dad was like, you know what, you should just go. Like, this is a big decision. And so we drove 8 hours from Pittsburgh to Western Massachusetts to go to the open house. But I'm glad I did, because it really helped me decide that that's where I wanted to go.
Your dad was so wise to, did he go with you? Yes.
Yeah, he did. Okay. We went together. Yeah.
That makes it easier too when you have, especially when it's an 8-hour drive, right? Like that would derail me from driving by myself.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Aw. So throughout school, did you have any wavering as far as your nutrition? Did you love every kind of, when you got into it, did you love it? Did you always feel like you were kind of in the right place?
No, I actually struggled with that a lot. So like I said, I love science. So I loved my science classes, but, in college I had an eating disorder and I had a really hard time in some of my classes because I was kind of, I wasn't really getting professional help yet and knew I had a problem, but I was taking the classes and like, I just found it really hard to stop thinking about food as it was. And then in my classes, I was thinking about food because I had to. So it was interesting, but it was, I kind of felt like I was in a tough spot, just in terms of healing from that. But I always found like the science aspect of it very interesting and easy to understand.
So that kind of kept you, going. You were kind of like, did you feel like you were kind of living a double life when it came to like, I'm studying to be a dietitian, but I have this eating disorder. Was that difficult for you?
Oh yeah, 100%. I felt like it wasn't something I could like disclose, even to like peers in the program. Which is funny, I guess not funny, but there's research that shows like a very high percentage of dietitians struggle with disordered eating or eating disorders. So there are probably a lot of other people feeling the same way I was, but no one was really talking
about it. No one was talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely, I did feel kind of like I was living a double life. And I actually did look into changing majors. I looked into, I like went and talked to advisors from other colleges at the university. But nothing seemed right enough to change to. So I just kept rolling with it. Yeah. And that's how I stayed doing it. Cause I didn't know what else to do.
Yeah. Well, and then you get into it too for so far and then you're like, oh geez, I'd have to start all over. And, but you know, like, I guess, you know, thinking of yourself as a college student, probably weren't thinking as much about taking care of yourself versus getting that degree, right? Like that's a hard, like you want to get done with school, but you're like, I really need to take care of myself and I might have to stop doing school. So I bet that all that kind of transpired for you too.
Oof. Yes. I mean, there was one point where my parents were even like, maybe you should take a year off. And I was like, absolutely not. I have to like finish college in 4 years. I'm not taking a break. So yeah, I mean, my priorities were definitely on like finishing school on time versus like self-care for sure.
How did that transition then for you into your internship then? I mean, was there still kind of like, were you still not quite getting the help that you needed or did you kind of just get through the internship and then focus on you?
Kind of both. I don't know. I don't remember how I discovered it, but I discovered the book Intuitive Eating. While I was still in college, I think my junior year, and I read that book and I also read Health at Every Size. So when I read those, they were like really healing for me personally, but I also saw, okay, there's another side of dietetics that I feel like aligns better with what I feel and think and what I need as a person. And so that kind of interested me and kept me going a little bit too, just knowing that there was that side of it. And then when I did my internship, I did some rotations, or I guess I won't say rotations, but I talked about intuitive eating a lot with my director and with my fellow interns and just tried to learn as much about it as I could. And also near the end of college, I started seeing a therapist and got the help that I needed. So it kind of came together like I was healing myself and I was also learning about like healing this relationship with food and seeing that I could do that as a dietitian for other people.
That's, I think I hear that a lot for people that do read those books, like when they get introduced to them and then they kind of are like, oh, wow, there's this whole new way to practice that wasn't even on my radar that I really resonate with. And that like gives them hope that there's a another side of dietetics that is just kind of made for the people that need a little bit more self-care than just the standard, here's your macros kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally. I think it's definitely like personality and just how you look at things. Some people, they can, you know, learn about nutrition science and not really feel emotional about it or turn it into something kind of disordered. But other people, that's not the case. So it definitely resonates better with people more like me. Like my boyfriend, he's very logical and compartmentalizes his feelings from facts very well. So he thinks intuitive eating is absolutely like ludicrous. But I always tell him, well, it's not for you then. You don't need it.
Sure.
There's other people who do though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. And that, you know, you're a younger dietitian than me. And that was not even, I mean, that was not even on radar in schools or in dietetic internships or just even like, you know, peers of mine had no idea what that was. So I love that it exists because, like you said, there's people need this and there's people that need like the science base. Like there's just other options and we need more of that in our field.
Absolutely. 100%.
So after internship, what was your next steps? What was your first, you know, job or your first kind of place in the workforce?
Yeah, this is a fun story. So I moved home to Pittsburgh after my internship and I, you know, studied for the exam and took that a few months later and then was looking for jobs. I didn't want to do clinical. So I was trying to apply for jobs. Like I was applying for a lot of kind of community nutrition jobs. And I wasn't really like getting any hits in the Pittsburgh area. So I started expanding my search radius and I just out of the blue decided to apply for a retail dietitian job like out in the Philadelphia area. And I reached out to one of the dietitians on LinkedIn to tell her I applied. And she was like, oh, actually, we don't have an opening at that store, but there's this other store in New Jersey kind of close to there that has an opening. Do you want to interview for it? And I was like, oh, sure. So I interviewed. they offered me the job and I took it. So I moved to South Jersey just by myself, not knowing anybody.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I don't know if I could have did that at that point in my life. So that is awesome.
Was it hard? Oh, yeah. It was very hard. It was partially like a little bit of, I don't want to say desperation, but I was just like so frustrated trying to find a job. And when I got that offer, I was just like, okay, sounds good.
I'm just going to do it. Well, I know, but you do kind of feel that way, don't you? Like when you first get out of school and you're like not finding anything, you're applying for things, you're not getting a shot. And then someone like gives you a shot and you're like, oh, I better take it because I don't know if I'll get another opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, I kind of was feeling like maybe I should move somewhere different. So it just kind of worked out that way.
So tell me about the job. How did that go? What did you think?
Yeah, it was a fun job. I got to do a lot of the things that I like to do. I did outpatient counseling. I ran classes. I gave, you know, educational presentations in the community, went to health fairs. I did cooking demos in the store. So all of like the actual job duties I enjoyed, but the work-life balance was difficult because since it was, you know, a retail job, I was expected to work a lot of weekends and evenings because that's when the store was really busy. And so that part of it was difficult, especially, you know, moving to a new place and not knowing anybody. It was kind of hard to like make friends.
Sure. Because all your friend time was taken up by the store.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And I mean, most of my coworkers were either, you know, there was a big disparity in age. It was like high school, college age kids and like kind of more middle aged, you know, department managers and stuff who'd been working there for a long time. And there weren't really a lot of people working there that were, you know, in my bracket. So it was hard to even make friends at work because none of them I really related to me very well in that sense. Like, we got along, but it wasn't like I was making friends at work. So that was hard. Probably the hardest part was moving to a new place and trying to like meet people and have a social life.
You were probably the only dietitian there too. So you didn't have like other dietitians that you were working with.
Yeah. Yep. I was the only one.
So yeah, I can see that being very difficult. So how are you, I'm assuming you're still not there. So I'm assuming you're not working there anymore, baby.
I am not.
Okay.
So I worked there for a little over a year and then I took a job, kind of in long-term care. It was mostly clinical work, similar to what you do in long-term care. But it was at an organization that services kids and adults with like intellectual and developmental disabilities and different behavioral diagnoses, and then like autism and Down syndrome. And I worked with a group of Prader-Willi patients too. Yeah, so it was kind of like a 360, or I guess a 180, I should say, from what I thought I would be doing. I was kind of like burnt out from retail and wanted to try clinical and see how that was different. So I did that for a year, and then I got my job at DaVita, which I'm still in that position now. I've been there for 3 years.
Okay. Tell me about the long-term care, because that sounds like a very specialized kind of arena of patients that you were working with. Was that like a big eye-opener of like things you didn't know, or how did you kind of transition into that specific work?
Yeah, it definitely was. So so the patients that I followed, they actually, most of them lived there. And so that in and of itself was eye-opening because there were a lot of like kids and teenagers that just lived there all the time. And that aspect of it was just kind of sad a little bit.
Sure.
And you kind of see like the how difficult it can be to manage some of those diagnoses, because some of the, you know, individuals would have really almost dangerous behaviors like to themselves and to other people, and not mean they didn't want to, but just kind of seeing that and how they had to manage it was difficult to watch. And, you know, the nutrition aspect of it was really challenging because, I mean, you couldn't even really educate some of the patients because they didn't, you know, have the mental capacity to learn about these things. So it was more educating their caregivers that were with them, who usually had priorities that were not nutrition.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But it was very interesting to learn about these different diagnoses and to see how nutrition could be affected. And it was kind of a cool, like, puzzle trying to figure out with some of the patients who couldn't really communicate very well, you know, what was going on and why maybe they weren't eating as much, or what their issues were and how to even help them. So it was things that I would never have to deal with, and I had to get really creative about how to approach different problems that came up.
You were like a detective. You're like a dietitian detective.
Yeah. I always tell this story. I had one individual who, he was like 17 or 18, but he would only eat chicken tenders, French fries, and he drank milk. And that was basically all he would eat. And he was just losing a ton of weight because he wasn't eating enough. And so it was really hard to try to figure out like how to get more nutrition into him. And one of the things we had to figure out was how to give him a multivitamin, because he didn't swallow pills. All of his pills were crushed, but and they mixed most of his pills in with his milk, but the multivitamin turned the milk like a weird color, and he knew it was in there, so he wouldn't drink it. So finally, after like many, many different ideas that failed, we figured out to crush it and mix it in with his ketchup that he dipped his french fries in.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's how we got him to take his multivitamin. But that's nothing that I would have ever had to do.
No. That's genius.
Well, thank you.
That is genius. I would have never even thought about condiments. And if that works, oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it did. Thank God.
No kidding. Oh, wow. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So interesting. How was, I will have to ask just about the Prady Willer. How was that to work with that condition?
Yeah, it was very interesting. I mean, the main role of the dietitian was each individual was on like a really strictly monitored diet. So we wrote their menus individually and went over their menus with them every other week. And then we also had to work with the staff who was monitoring them to make sure they were actually sticking to their menus, because they could be really manipulative to try to get extra food. And so, you know, we'd have to print out their menus and give them to the staff. And the number one rule was always you cannot like eat anything that's not on this unless if the dietitian says it's okay. And there were lots of times where they tried to find a way to finagle some extra food.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, they'd say, oh, well, Talia said it was okay if I have this extra piece of bread or things like that.
You're like, so, it's not on the list.
Exactly. It was honestly, I got like a lot of phone calls, you know, at lunchtime, especially I would get phone calls from the staff being like, this individual asked if they could have this. Is that true? And most of the time the answer is no.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was interesting. I think the hardest part about that was balancing the, like still balancing the wants and needs of the individual and also working with the staff to make sure, you know, we stayed within those parameters and that the person was safe and was getting the right supervision that they needed.
Sure. That's a whole area, that specific kind of area of patients that people don't hear a lot about, that because it is such a very unique setting. And I know that they exist all over the United States. And then there's a dietitian that takes care of those patients. But it's very intriguing to me because it's so, like you said, it's such a balance between the caregiver and the patient.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, I built good relationships with the Prader-Willi individuals that I worked with, and you know, they would tell me how hard it was for them to like stick to their menu and to try not to steal food and all these things. So it definitely, like, there were times it was hard to say no, and it was a balancing act for sure. And it taught me a lot. So
it was very emotional, I bet. Very like heart, like it just probably tugs at your heart too a lot with those kind of patients.
Oh yeah, it does.
And was this also in New Jersey? Did you stay in New Jersey or did you move?
Oh no. So I moved, I lived in Jersey for a year and then I moved into Philadelphia. And that job was in like a suburb of Philadelphia. Yeah.
Okay. So you moved back. Okay. I was just trying to kind of follow the timeline of if you stayed in New Jersey or not. So yeah. You moved back, you did that job and then you got into renal care. So how did you get interested in that?
Yeah. So I worked at the long-term care for about a year again. And then I just kind of was looking for something different. And I knew a dietitian who had a lot of connections. So I kind of reached out to her and she worked for DaVita. And so she was like, oh, there's an opening. It's great here. I love it. You should apply. So I kind of just do this where I just am like, okay, I'll try this. And I just try it.
I love that about you. You're just like, hey, okay, sounds good. I think that's a great attribute.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so applied and got the job. So that's what I went with.
And you've been there for 3 years. So do you specialize? I mean, like, do you do all the patients in your facility, or is there multiple dietitians there? Or what does that look like?
It depends. We have a set census that we're supposed to have like a full-time workload. And most of the dialysis clinics don't have enough patients to meet that census. So usually we're covering at least two clinics. So,
okay.
I cover two clinics, but the one clinic I split with another dietitian, and one is all my own.
So you have quite a few patients that you see on a regular basis then.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We're supposed to have like around 120 for 40 hours. So it's a lot. It's a lot of patients.
Oof, that is a lot. And do you have one-on-one? Do you have one-on-one with them all the time? You don't have one-on-one with them all the time. You kind of go in a rotation with them, or what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I kind of split my week. I'm at one of the facilities 3 days a week and the other one 2 days a week. So, you know, every day that I'm there, I round and I talk to the patients. But, you know, it depends on the week. They get lab draws once a month usually. So it's busier talking to them when their labs are back in and I have to go over those. But on the weeks that that's not going on, it's kind of just seeing if they need anything and following up on things. So it sounds like a lot, but, you know, most days when I round, it's maybe 40 patients tops that I talk to, which I guess is still a lot, but
that is still a lot, dear. Yeah. And I'm assuming you have to chart on all these patients too.
Well, the nice thing about dialysis is you have to chart on every patient once a month, but it's nice. Not like every time I talk to them, I have to chart about it. But I don't.
So you wouldn't have time to do that. Whew.
Oh, I know. I would not have time for sure.
What's the biggest challenge you see with your patients in renal?
I think dialysis is a very big just wrench in your life. It's a lot of time out of their day that they have to go to the center to get their treatment. A lot of them say it's their part-time job because it is.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times they're at the center for anywhere from like 4 to 6 hours on the day that they go. And so I think just adjusting to it, and also the diagnosis, you know, they have to take a lot of medications, they have to have all these dietary restrictions. And so it's just a lot to manage, and it can be really difficult to accept. So I think that's probably the hardest part for them, for sure.
I could see that, because you're right, it is kind of like their other full-time job.
Yeah, it is.
Because it does take so much time. Yes.
Yeah.
So a person that didn't want to go into clinical is still in clinical. Yes.
Yes. I know. I've been telling my interns that, you know, they ask me about my career and I'm like, well, I never would have expected to work here. I never thought I'd do clinical. So don't ever, you know,
roll it out.
Yeah, exactly.
But you also have an interest and you kind of do some things on the side as well. So do you want to kind of share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I started a private practice last summer, focusing more on intuitive eating. And I do focus on disordered eating and eating disorders, but I also like helping other people with other concerns. I have a few like sports nutrition clients. I haven't had any like renal patients or diabetes, but I do a lot of that at dialysis and I like doing it. So I'm hoping to grow that area. But yeah, I do it all virtually. So right now it's on the side and hopefully will be a full-time gig eventually. Yeah, but it's been a fun creative outlet, like doing stuff on Instagram and, you know, figuring out how to do the different things you have to do for private practice. So it's been fun so far.
Well, and I think you do a great job on Instagram. I love your social media, but I think it's interesting how you're balancing a full-time job and you're doing this on the side. How does someone find the time for all of that with the balance like we talked about earlier?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, one of the things I love about dialysis, working in that setting, is the schedule is pretty pretty set. Like, I go in early and I can leave pretty early. Don't have to work weekends or holidays. So I do have maybe a little bit of extra time than I would have if I was working like 9 to 5 and expected to work weekends and stuff. So that's one aspect of it, just having some extra, I don't know, I guess I don't have extra time compared to other people working 40 hours, but it feels that way because I get done at work usually at 3 or 4. So I have like the evening to do other things. It's really just about like making sure self-care is there though. Getting enough sleep and eating right. And I mean, I always tell people I never would have been able to do this a few years ago. Like, I've had lots and lots of therapy and it's helped me, you know, manage stress really well. So I find it not too difficult these days to kind of be in tune with, okay, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed. I need to like take a step back and relax so that I don't burn myself out. So it's just about kind of learning as I go, I guess. But you just have to have those stress management techniques in place. And definitely time management is a learning curve for me, but just trying to block out time for different things.
Sure. Well, it sounds like you've kind of figured out, I mean, the stress part is a huge part, right? Like, we have to control our stress or like be able to work through stress to do the things that we dream about. Cause obviously your private practice is like your dream, right? You definitely want to make sure that you know, take care of that and grow that and build upon that. But you also care about your full-time job and your patients. So I think you're doing a great job by having some therapy. Therapy is so great. Shout out to therapy to help with, you know, teaching you how to deal with stress. And then it sounds like you have really good boundaries set up too, as far as, you know, full-time job versus when you're going to schedule your private practice people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always think about, this might be sound kind of weird, but A Christmas Carol, Ebenezer Scrooge, how like at the end of his life, you know, he goes back with the ghosts of Christmas past and present. And like, there's all this stuff that he sees about how his life was full of friends and loved ones and he was happy, and then his life became all about like work and money, and now he's this like lonely old man. And I always think about that at times, and I'm like, you know what, I need to not have work be my life and make sure that I'm like focusing on just being happy, because I don't want to be Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh my God, that's a great thing to think of. I'm going to think of that all the time now, because you're right. That's so true. We can't do the hustle so much and forget about all of our personal life.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, when we look back on our lives, what we think about and what matters the most is, you know, the people in our life and the experiences we've had. And work is just work. I don't want my whole life to be work. So,
no, I'm with you. That's a great, I'm going to use that now. I'm going to, like, when I'm getting frustrated at work, I'm going to take that into my head and think about that and say, all right, moving on. Got to have some balance here, because we easily can get caught up in that too. And I'm sure you probably do from time to time, but it's good that you have that way to check in with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it, girl. So kind of, you're just kind of working, and obviously you have more of that kind of, and you did the thing where you like went to a new job and you worked nights and weekends and you didn't have that balance. So you're very aware, probably currently, like you're never going to go back to that place, and you're trying purposely to have that outside balance with your personal life too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Much more aware, like you said, of the boundaries. I am willing, you know, to sometimes go above and beyond, but it's ultimately like my choice. So I don't know. We take it as it comes.
I love it. That's good. I like that very much so. Anything else you want to share with our listeners about kind of where you're going? I know that you're kind of thinking private practice as your future full-time gig, but anything else that you really enjoy doing when it comes to dietetics or recommend dietitians get involved in?
I mean, I love public speaking. And so once I started my practice, I've been trying to do more of that, just networking in my local community and giving like free presentations for different groups. Like I've given a presentation at for a running group. I've given one for like a YMCA. I'm doing another running one next month. Just different, you know, different things to just get out in the community and kind of help people out a little bit. Makes my heart happy. And I also recently spoke at a conference about how intuitive eating can be combined with medical nutrition therapy. I know.
That sounds exciting. I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, when I was doing it and preparing for it, and even just on Instagram, I've talked to some dietitians who are like, yeah, I'm just learning about intuitive eating. I don't know how to use it in my practice, though, because it doesn't seem like it fits with what I do. And so I've kind of been thinking somehow in my business, trying to maybe help dietitians with that. But I haven't really, it's kind of just on the docket for now, but that's something I'm interested in doing more of.
Sign me up. I think that would be so beneficial for, I think there's just a generation, like probably my generation, that doesn't have that education. So I feel like there would be a whole slew of people that would be very interested in that. And I love that you do things that kind of light your fire for like just your passions and speaking with people. And that also will help your future private practice too, right?
Yeah, totally. It gets the name out there. I mean, I know a lot of people say like, don't ever do anything for free, but I don't know. Like I said, it makes my heart happy. And I like helping people and teaching people. And if you have a practice, you know, doing any kind of public event gets your name out there to more people. So it's not like it's all for nothing. Yeah, it's just something fun to do. So just because I'm not getting paid doesn't mean I'm not getting a return on my investment of time.
Sure. And if it makes your heart happy, like that's a pretty big return on investment too, I think.
Yeah, it is.
I love it, girl. Love it. Well, I've asked all the really, really easy questions. Are you ready for the hard questions?
Ooh, baby. Yeah, let's
go. Why don't you share with me some foods that you enjoy?
Ooh. Well, I love peanut butter. I've always been known for just loving peanut butter. So peanut butter and jelly is one of my favorite like lunches to bring for work. I've also been really into eggplant recently in all different kinds of forms. I love eggplant.
You should probably teach me about how to eat eggplant because I've only had it deep fat fried with breadcrumbs. So
yeah, there's lots of other ways, but that's one of the best ways, I think.
I mean, I feel like it's one of those uncharted vegetables that people probably need to explore more because I think it absorbs flavors that you put it with and it's very like mild and it has a lot of, you can do a lot with it. I think it's like the next cool zucchini, like zucchini was so cool. I think eggplant needs to make a comeback.
I agree. Yeah, let's make that happen.
I have to ask, since you like peanut butter, do you try different types of peanut butter or different brands, or do you just like good old, like basic grocery store peanut butter?
Honestly, it depends on the day. I am more partial to like the natural peanut butter that's just peanuts. I like the flavor. It's like more peanutty. But sometimes I want like the smoother texture and the a little extra sweetness. So in terms of brands, I would say I don't really particularly have a favorite. I just sometimes go for the more natural or the one that's just smoother and sweeter.
Gotcha. I like the drippiness of the, just like the peanut one. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun just like drizzle and drip it all over all the things.
Yes. Agreed.
What about beverages that you enjoy?
I love doing, I've been into mocktails recently. I haven't made any though recently. You know, I have been into hibiscus tea. Especially I like it iced. So that's really yummy, especially when the weather gets warm. It's very refreshing. I also love like coconut drinks. So of course, like pina colada, but I love making smoothies with like coconut milk and adding coconut extract. Yeah.
That's a good combo. I agree with you. You do kind of feel like you're on a tropical island when you have some coconut extract in something or coconut milk.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious. I've never had hibiscus tea. I'm a tea person, so I'll have to try that.
Yeah, it's kind of, I've noticed it a lot more in like coffee shops and even restaurants making like cocktails with it. I feel like it's becoming very trendy.
I guess I better get on the trend. Thanks for keeping me up on the trends, Talia.
Anytime.
Okay. How about scents or smells that you enjoy?
I love like pumpkin spice, the scent of pumpkin spice and like maple. And vanilla too is probably my favorite.
Sounds cozy and like, do you get good fall weather where you live? So it kind of makes you think of that time of year.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good time.
It is.
If there was someone that you could sit down, whether they're past or they're alive, you could sit down and have coffee, tea, dinner with, who would that be?
Yeah, that's a good one. So I never knew my grandparents on my dad's side. They both passed away. Well, my grandfather had passed away before I was born. My grandmother passed away when I was a baby. And so I grew up and I knew my mom's parents very well. Like they babysat us and they were always around. But I always felt like, you know, my dad's side of the family is the Italian side. And I always felt like I missed out on that, you know, when people talk about their Italian grandma, like I never had that. And I just kind of wish I could, you know, meet them and talk to them and learn more about that side of the family and the history there. Of course, my dad teaches me about it, but I don't know. My dad always tells me, too, I'm a lot like his mom. And so I just wish I could meet her.
You're curious. Like,
yeah.
That would be so fun, right? Just to have like a moment to like kind of just again see them, meet them, see what their life was like. I know that's a bummer when you, I kind of had that same situation, so it's kind of a bummer when you don't know them.
Yeah, it's like, it's not the grief of knowing them and losing them, it's just kind of like, I never got to know them, you know?
Yeah. And they're my family and I just didn't know who they were. Yeah. But that's fun that your dad shares that stuff with you, because I'm sure that's kind of nice to hear.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And then finally, what brings you joy in life?
I love dancing. Anytime I dance, immediately stress is gone and I feel very happy. I've always loved dancing. And same thing like with live music, like going to see live music, but not a concert, just kind of at like a restaurant or a bar when there's a band there, just the acoustics of the music, like filling up the space and kind of like, I don't know, you can like feel it in your body. Like you're almost vibrating from it. I just love that feeling and that experience. So definitely like dancing and music bring me a lot of joy.
Oh, please tell me that your boyfriend takes you dancing and to places with music.
Oh, he does not take me dancing.
He needs to take you dancing. That would be so fun.
Yeah. So I've been going to a dance studio here in Philly for almost 2 years now. And I used to take dance growing up, so I still have those skills. But I've been learning like different ballroom dancing styles, like salsa and bachata and swing dancing.
That's fun.
Yeah, but he won't do it with me.
Oh,
I know.
I always tell my significant other, if I put on a dress, he better take me dancing. So maybe you should start doing that and say, if I put on a dress, will you take me dancing? Because I never wear a dress.
Yeah, I don't really wear them a lot either. I'll have to try that.
Yeah, but that would be so fun. I mean, that's, I think that's fun that you're doing that for yourself, because like that's one of those things, again, that brings you joy, that makes you happy, that, I mean, it's good to feed into those other parts of our life, even if your boyfriend doesn't take you dancing, but to do it for yourself.
Yeah, it's very fun. And I mean, I made a lot of friends from it, so it's not like I'm there and I'm like alone. I have some good friends now. So I don't mind it too much, but he does take me out to see music. So,
oh, good. Okay. There we go. Well, that's a good compromise.
Yeah.
I do agree with you about the music, like the vibes and the, like, you know, like you said, like a restaurant or like a dinner place and there's live music. It's just, even if it's just like one instrument, there's just something about how the whole room changes and how the meal tastes better. It's just, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, yes. Good vibes.
Yes, I love it. Well, Talia, thank you so much for sharing your journey so far. I know that I will continue to be a fan and follow along. And if you ever do the thing with the intuitive eating education for dietitians, let me know, because I will, I'm your girl. I'll sign up for sure. So
I will do that. You'll be the top education. Of my list.
Okay, good, good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. This is really fun.
I think as dietitians, we can all kind of resonate with Talia and our love for all things food. Maybe a few of us, though, along with the way, can also recognize how our love for food had become or was or is some form of disordered eating. I will say I'm part of that camp. I think early in life, I definitely struggled with that at a young age. And I probably do in many ways in my older age too. I think it's just hard to get over it. But I think our conversation, Talia has a great outlook. She's gotten help and she actually is able to recognize how things are going, how they need to change. And that's what she does for her patients and her clients. She wants to be their biggest cheerleader and to help them, you know, succeed and not have the issues that she had. So I love having those conversations with dietitians who are realistic and come forward with those kind of things that happen to them personally. And I, you know, if you do, you know, if you're a person that do struggles with some disordered eating, even as a professional, it's always good to be in touch with dietitians like Talia, because they have great insight and they've done a lot of the hard work that they can help us with. So make sure to go follow her over on Instagram at body.trust.dietitian. Remember to be great always, find the joy in each day, and to start a conversation that truly matters.